Hello and welcome to another edition of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are winning nothing with kids in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it was very much a week for the promotion of our youngsters, but to very different effect. First, on Saturday at Newcastle, Graham Potter named a side that few of us would have predicted that included a 21-year-old debutant in the shape of Stephen Alzate, whose performance won rave reviews. And then, on Wednesday, the Potter selection for the Carabao Cup game of Aston Villa was not so universally popular, with eight of the starting 11 and all of the bench being made up of under-23s. It was very much a case of men against boys. Today, we made the short trip to West London to face Frank Lampard's Chelsea side that also has a youthful look about it. And hopefully the grown-ups will be back for the Albion. Joining me today is a man who will be raising his bat this weekend and toasting his half century. And it's fair to say there's nothing youthful about Alan Wares. And we're also delighted to welcome back, who has just been named as chairman of the Supporters Club. It's Nigel Summers. And we also welcome back a man who used to be on this show more than Andy Bass. But he very clearly dropped his phone in the toilet. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Adam Virgo.
Hello, Adam. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I mean, did you say, I'm 50 on Sunday, did you say?
Apparently.
That's about 18,800 deliveries or something, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Of pizza, knowing you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so, Nigel, welcome back to The Raw. It's been a while.
Well, talking of our 50th anniversaries, last Friday was the 50th anniversary of me going to watch the Albion.
Really?
Brighton against Barrow, 20th of September, 1969. I don't look old enough, I stopped.
No, you do not, no.
Oh, actually, do you know what the game was when you were born? Your first game of, in your life?
Have looked it up. I think it was a League Cup game against Wolves.
It wasn't, actually. We were away at Bradford and we lost.
Right. I think there might have been a couple of days before then in that case.
That Wolves game.
Yeah, it was.
Game,
that was, yeah. That was on
1969.
That was when, at the Barrow game I went to, they were selling tickets for the Wolves, the big Wolves
right,
game.
Got you.
And so so it was exactly the same.
Got the right week.
Absolutely.
But yeah. Adam, of course, was born in 1983.
Cup final year.
Yeah. Just to put it into context for me.
Yeah.
But welcome back to...
We do, dear. Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome
thanks,
back
Adam.
To the show, though, Adam.
Thank
it's,
you.
It's lovely to see you again.
Welcome
and
back
and
to your starting point, frankly.
I know, yeah. I've flown the nest.
I know, we're like proud parents.
So what have you been doing since you sort of ran away from us?
I've been doing a lot.
Doing the circus?
Yeah, still doing that and acrobatics. Yeah, still doing all my BT work and... just keeping myself busy. Got the academy open now, which is keeping me extra busy. But I can't complain. Still love what I do. I still really, really enjoy it. And I'm happy to be back as well.
So your BT stuff is extending your length and the breadth of the country, basically doing a lot of the non-league stuff. And,
yeah.
And you also did you went to Eindhoven recently?
Yeah, so
well,
I did PSV versus Sporting. So I've now made it onto the Europa League roster, which is a good step up for me. I did the England under-21 game the other day, England-Kosovo. I did the FA Youth Cup final last year, Manchester City versus Liverpool. So the time that I've been now, I'm slowly working my way up the ladder. I still need, my goal is to be Champions League and to do a Premier League game. That's still my two goals to still
Fantastic.
To do there.
Do you have a UEFA badge for commentating?
No, I don't, no. I've just got my BT pass. Okay. It gets me into the ground.
Sounds a bit like the referees, that they make their way up the league ladders, is it there?
Yeah, I've had to, you know, it's the one thing is like when you don't play in the Premier League, it's very difficult to put your name forward to stuff. So you have to kind of work your way in a company and work your way up. You know, I do MLS now on Sky, which is really, really good for me as well. I do FA Cups now for World Feeds companies. So it's just getting your name out there and just biding your time and above all, just working hard. Yeah.
Absolutely. So when you say you went out to Eindhoven, I mean, because previously it's kind of, you know, one of the sort of horrible tricks of the trade is you're stuck in a broom cupboard in London commentating on a feed from Italy or Spain or whatever, but you're actually sort of being let loose.
Yeah,
and...
so, I mean, a lot of your European games that you do that they are buying the rights from, say, someone else and just showing it on their screens, you tend not to go to. But when BT have invested money into the Champions League and invested money into Europa League, there's more of a budget to send people out there. So that's been really, really good for me. And I watch National League football, which I enjoy. Yeah. And I'd mentioned Barrow. It would have gone to the away game, trust me. He'd still be trying to get back. Yeah. But yeah, so it's just good watching all levels of football. But BT have upped their games to 50 National League this season when it's been like 35, 40. So I'm just keeping really busy and just keeping my head down and enjoying myself, which is the main thing.
What you say? You mentioned, did you say you went to Eindhoven recently? I suspect that's one of the few stadiums in Europe I have been to. I went there for Euro 2000. I saw Italy against Sweden there. That's a weird one. One, it's got really steep banks, but two, I was quite surprised. And I think other stadiums do have it. I think probably because the company is owned by Philips, the electrical sort of giant, they've got heaters in the roof.
Yeah, did you notice? Yeah, it's mad.
I mean, it didn't need it in that summer.
No.
Well, that's a bit different to Barrow.
Yeah. True. Yeah,
which needs it more.
Okay. Need a windshield.
You do go to a lot of these northern outposts. What's the coldest place you've ever had to commentate?
Grimsby. Because you have to climb over the roof of the stadium to get down to your gantry point, and you literally have to hold on for dear life. So if you do like an evening game, because the Grimsby ground's right on the coast, and that blows an absolute gale, and it does say warning, you know, when you go there, high winds. So that's freezing. But sometimes when you go there, and I dress like an Eskimo, it's actually quite warm, so it's just a bit hit and miss.
Adam is going to be posting pictures of him dressed as an Eskimo
And the nicest place you've been to then within the sort of like the non-league?
Harrogate's lovely.
Yeah.
Harrogate's a nice part of the world. Forest Green was nice down in the West Country.
Yeah. But I mean, in that league as well, you've also got a lot of the established football league sides.
Yeah, I mean, Leinorin went up last season. Luton have been promoted in seasons gone by. You got Wrexham that are still in there. Chesterfield have been relegated. You got Notts County in there now. Yeovil are back in the National League. So the league is getting better and better. You know, Stockport are now promoted after, you know, years in the wilderness. So it's a really competitive league. I mean, Woken are top at the minute, which is near a part-time side. So the league's almost upside down.
Sure.
Okay. Now, Adam, it's been a while since you've been in to see us here. Now, and since you were, the landscape's changed a little bit for the Albion. Obviously, Graham Potter's come in now.
Who was the manager the last time you came
Chris
in?
Chris Hughton was. But it was. Yeah. But I mean, we don't want to dwell on that too much. But I mean, what was your opinion of the departure of Chris?
I think I wasn't surprised. In my opinion, I just felt that. I think he'd just taken the club as far as he could as a manager. I think when people look back at Chris's tenure, they should look back at it that very, very successful. Mm-hmm. That he did a job of getting the club into the Premier League and he kept the club in the Premier League. And maybe last season people look at the style of football and think, well, it was quite negative and it was the same for Huddersfield at home to Man City at home. But you can't take away the job that Chris has done. Mm. He's done an absolutely fantastic job. And I just thought the time had just come that he needed to move on.
And but
I
was surprised. FA Cup semi-final as well?
Yeah, FA Cup semi-final. I think it was FA Cup quarter-final as well. But to keep Brighton in the Premier League that first season was a massive, massive achievement. And then you look at Huddersfield, for instance, look where they are, and Stoke and team. So it's not easy. So yeah. You'll see what a good manager he is by his next job. He will get a good club.
Yeah. Nigel, were you surprised?
Absolutely. Totally shocked. I couldn't believe it because of the timing. Mm. Now the best thing of it was they gave themselves the whole summer to get ready for the new one. I mean, look at Watford, you know, 3 weeks in and they appoint a new manager. I think that's terrible. But yeah, I was absolutely shocked.
Yeah, that's because they lost to us.
It was. It got thrashed by us. But it was hard work watching the Albion last year, no question about it. And if we want to move on, and all the signs are that we're okay. But I can't say I wasn't shocked.
Okay, so was it the timing or was it the decision itself or a bit of both?
A bit of both, but I've heard a lot of people say, like Adam's just said, that they weren't surprised or you know, could see it coming. I couldn't see it coming, but then I'm the sort of person who goes to a movie and I can never see the end. So you never ask me to forecast anything what's going to happen.
You're the one that cries at Full Metal Jacket, aren't you?
Don't get me started.
Okay, well, let's just move on then. Let's talk briefly about last Saturday then. And I mentioned it in the intro there that it was a side that none of us would have really predicted.
Well, it's not only a side we couldn't predict, it's a formation you can predict. You see that lineup and you think, okay, we've got four centre-backs, we've got 16 wingers, Ryan's playing up front, who's going where? I mean, one of the things about Graham Potter, even in the early days that we've noticed here, I mean, he's fluid with his formations during a game, but certainly fluid with his team choices game to game. I mean, I'm sure that any given manager will probably prefer a settled lineup. But obviously Potter's, you know, his attitude is kind of going with what he sees in front of him. And I obviously, with the fact he's now prepared to bring in the kids a lot more, therefore there's more elements of the game and the style of play is now available to him, which was available to Chris, but he chose not to use. Okay, fine, you have your choices, that's the manager's prerogative. But, you know, so when you see that line, you scratch your head, you think, okay, who's going where?
We were wondering how the opposition scout us. You, one week to the next, it's really quite different.
But Adam, we got to look in the first team for the first time at Stephen Alzate against your old team, Bristol Rovers, in the last round of the Carabao Cup. And he impressed a lot, and obviously he's been training with the first team, so perhaps it wasn't that much of a surprise that
Leighton Orient fans also love him. Yeah, do you remember that? Did you see him last year?
I did, yeah. He's a talented player. Not comparing it to my situation. I remember in League One when Peter Taylor used to play me when Morgs got injured, Simon Morgan, the centre-half.
Yeah.
But he'd throw me in against Cardiff at home. He threw me in against the big games that he's not afraid to. And that as any kid, is a massive cock. Because Newcastle's, for Brighton, is a bigger game than Man City, because they're the games that Brighton need to be winning. So for him to throw in a kid in that situation, away from home as well, where you're expected to do a lot more off the ball than on the ball, is credit to him. And what it also does as well, it just sets a little trigger points for the youth team and the academy now, that these players are now getting a chance where maybe over the last few seasons you have this Category 1 academy. Yeah. There's no pathway for them. It feels like now, okay, the Villa game's a different example, but Premier League game where it's big money, it's a business, you need everything, you need the results, and he's still not afraid. I'm at the story, Daniel James at Manchester United now. Last season, he was about to go on loan to Yeovil. And Graham came in and said, he's not going anywhere, he's staying with me. And look what's happened. So he recognises talent.
To see how many of your old teams we can mention, actually.
That's true, yeah.
It's quite a lot. Can you remember your debut? Actually, Nigel, can you tell me what was unique about Adam's debut?
Do you remember before the show started, I said to you, one of the things is my memory is so bad, I can't remember what happened last week.
But you remember 50 years ago.
Yeah.
I've looked it up, let's be fair.
But, go on then, what was it about Virg's debut?
What was unique about your debut, can you remember?
Well, I think I made my debut in the LDV against Brentford.
Yes.
And I made my league debut against Mansfield.
Yeah, 1-2-0 against Mansfield.
So what was unique about it?
It was a home game that was played at Griffin Park.
Oh, that one.
Oh, really?
You've
Danny just absolutely... If, for those who don't have super reverb vision, Adam has just given a WTF look across his face.
It was Danny Cullip got sent off in the 55th minute and you came on to replace him.
Yeah, and the game went to extra time
and
we lost in penalties.
Right, yeah. It was 2-2.
It was 2-2.
Lost 4-2.
I thought it was 0-0.
And I've got the side here as well, which was amazing. It's a brilliant side.
Kuipers? Watson?
Yes.
Crosby?
Yes.
Cullip?
Yes.
Mayo?
Yes.
Oatway? Carpenter?
Yes.
Brooker?
Yes.
Zamora?
Yes.
Did Dan Freeman play that night?
He was on the bench.
I'm lost now.
Yeah, obvious one.
Gary Hart.
That's a full first team for an LDV game, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? What year was that?
That was in, I've got the date of, 2001.
Wow.
It was January 2001.
Yeah, right. How do you reckon you played when you came on?
I did well. I did all right. It was one of them where you go and, like, you see Danny Beans and you just go and warm up and you don't really think, you think there's other senior players that he might change the format. He may put Kerry in at centre half or something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he threw me on and, I came on, I think I did well that evening and we lost some penalties and I think I did that well that Mickey started me the next game against Mansfield.
I read in the paper on Monday, that Alzate said that Dan Byrne had talked him through the game and encouraged him. Was that the same thing?
Oh, massively. I mean, I can't say the experienced players that I had around me that talk you through the game is absolutely massive. Even when I was
is that important?
Oh, huge, absolutely huge. And I agree with Graham's team selection to a certain extent against Aston Villa, but when you're a youngster, you need to bleed in. Like when I used to play in the reserves. And you've got a mixture of youngsters and experience, you learn far more because young players go very quiet and young players can get quite lost quite quickly. And if you've got an experienced player behind you that's talking you through the game all the time And then it just breeds confidence into you that if you feel that you're doing something wrong, that someone's seeing something when you're not on the ball. But I can understand, you know, Dan Byrne talking players through the game.
Now, Alzate, he did impress. A lot of people gave him man of the match. But, I mean, he did blot his copybook out.
Yes, he did. I mean, I think I wasn't surprised to see Alzate playing well. I mean, we saw that feed of the game against Austria, in Austria during pre-season. Yeah. And he looked like... Sorry?
Against Liefeling.
Liefeling, thank you. He mostly played in centre midfield, but he was kind of more of a kind of Bissouma type player, but he possibly played him wide this time. And yes, he did really well. all right, he scored that sort of goal, which, yes, it was offside, it was unlucky, but, you know, it was, you know, correctly given. Without VAR, I was thinking, hang on, that's offside, you know, I'm not going up for that. But yes, and this is a little thing that's crept in, and I hope it's not a trend that we're going to see more of. It happened against Newcastle, and it happened twice against Villa, is the youngsters going down in the box a little too easily, and one of them actually got caught out for it and got a card for it, probably quite correctly. It's part of the game, and it really shouldn't be. But I don't want to see a Brighton player doing that. Unless it's against Palace, in which case
it's
funny.
Got VAR. It's.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, it was checked. That's the point. And the referee never gave it. And we're back to umpire's call again. If he'd have given it, I can't believe that it wouldn't have been overturned.
Mm. I mean, you're close to Glenn Murray. Obviously, he didn't play in this game. But I mean, in the week before, he should have had a penalty where he was like clearly.
You keep saying this. Sorry, I've seen this. I'm really not convinced. I thought Glenn went down fine. He was waiting for the push.
Going down far too easily.
Yes,
but he's clever in what he does. Yes. He feels contact and he goes down, and he'll win the team hundreds of free kicks.
He'll also give them away.
But then there'll be other times where it'll work against him. Yeah. But listen, you sometimes expect contact to happen and you kind of sort of...
You brace your body for it, don't you?
You do, and you go down and you think... And then you look silly when it doesn't. You don't get any contact, but...
Well, look at James Maddison last year. A real up-and-coming and prospect. Yeah. Gets booked for tripping a player who's sort of having a breakaway. And then 10 minutes later, goes down in the box. Referee sees it. Not having that. Your second yellow card. Sling your rook, son. You know, and he apologised afterwards. But... You know, is it something that, you know, this is a young, up-and-coming England player, and if someone at that level, you know, and we've got our kids coming through, and it's not necessarily they're being taught it, but they're not being not taught it.
Well, we don't know, do we?
Well, that's the point. Why are they going down when there is no foul? You know, it's slightly concerning. If you're going to say it's part of the game, then it's a modern malaise that's getting worse.
Is it something that any of your coaches at any of the clubs that you've been at, like, said, if you feel a contact, go down?
Oh, Gus said it all the time. Gus Poyet said it every single... If he goes, if you feel any contact, go down. However soft it is, he says, go down. I think Glenn still uses that today. But he literally said, if you get touched, go down. Make the referee make a decision. And Gus was adamant on that. And I always remember, like, he used to tell Alan Navarro all the time, anyone breaks on the counter, just trip him up. Like, literally, just stop him. Just trip him up. And he said, however many yellow cards you get, if you get suspended for 5 yellows for stopping a counter-attack, you'll never get dropped. So he was quite for... Not diving, but he said any contact, go down.
That's not a sort of aspect of football. Because even at a distance, you can see when someone's trying to when you use the phrase, make the referee make a decision. But is it really honest?
No, it's not. But I think for me, it's like a foreign mentality. I comment on a lot of European football. There's a lot of diving that goes on, which is kind of like...
And it came into this game, in this country,
and it is,
didn't
now.
It?
Yeah, it's the culture's changing all the time. Now.
I think I heard you... I can't remember what game. It was a French game you were doing last season. Mm-hmm. And someone went over very easy, and you were very incredulous. It was hilarious.
Well, you called it as you saw it. That was
I think you said, what's he doing? What's he doing that for?
Yeah. But I think, like you say, now we've got VAR... It's going to be kind of pointless. It's not going to be a free kick. They're going to get pulled up for it, and maybe it'll reduce. I don't know.
It's got to be a mugging almost now for a penalty, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just looking for something good to come out of VAR.
Well, there is that. I mean, but you also think of the likes of, I think one time Danny Cullip once got booked for, you know, simulation. You think that's almost an insult to... Can you imagine, of all people, Danny Cullip taking a dive?
I think what a fan would like to see... is that if a player goes down expecting contact and gets up and just sort of waves saying, no penalty, he hasn't touched me, then you can kind of accept it. It's when they try and still try and win it, which you think
outcome
actually...
Outcome the arms in.
It's not in the integrity of the game.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you mentioned Gus Poyet there. Now, obviously, one of the key elements of his style of football was possession.
Possession, yeah.
And we had 72% of the possession at Newcastle.
That was, as a performance, I mean, bearing in mind that with, you know, with Gus Poyet, it was in the third division, and it was a you know, pretty revolutionary way of playing in the third division. That was kind of Poyet plus, wasn't it? It was, you know, we haven't done that sort of thing in the Premier League. It didn't reap its rewards, but it was actually just, you know, a major leap forward to actually have the ball, win it back well, and then try and do something with it. Yeah, we were a bit lacking up front. But
it was very much a case of if you don't buy a ticket, you don't win a raffle, though. I mean, the amount of opportunities we had to shoot and we didn't take, and then when we did shoot, it was a poor decision-making, particularly from Neil Maupay at times.
Are you going to blame him alone?
No, not just him, yeah. But...
Well, it's the finishing generally. You saw Dale Stevens take a shot and it ends up. I mean, that's a big old stand at the back, you know, behind that goal at Newcastle. And I'm sure he hit the roof a couple of times there. But it's not okay. Great shooting at the moment we've got.
But let's just flip this a little bit, though. You're a Newcastle fan. You're at home to Brighton. Dear. And you've got 28% of possession.
Yeah. We're not Man City yet, are we?
No. But I think it's encouraging. I mean, keep the ball better enables players to get forward a little bit more, and I think the 3-5-2 formation that Graham sort of alluded to is, I think, enables that opportunity. I think under Chris it was very regimented, you know, and you weren't really seeing your midfielders giving support to Mope or Glenn, whoever it is he decides to play down the middle. So you'd rather be creating chances and saying, like, we should be taking them, but you don't want to be saying, well, we're hardly creating anything at the moment. It's like, where's the shot going to come from? So I think you've got to try and, you know, the Connolly incident where it was cleared off the line, you know, that's just unlucky. But yeah. I can be more... I think the one thing that's probably missing is maybe another win on the board at the start of the season. Because I think the teams that you've played against are winnable games.
The stats don't lie. We've not won at home since March.
No.
Yeah, but we're turning defeats into draws. We need to turn those draws into wins. I mean, that's the you know, steps at a time. Yeah. Nigel, what did you reckon to the performance overall against Newcastle?
It was... I didn't go this year. My son came home from Canada visiting this week, so I didn't make the trip. And I've seen some tough games up there, but I would have loved to have been at that game because I thought the performance was good. The possession was good, but you just mentioned then, Adam, about just it's winning the ball back as well. They're winning it back and keeping it. There's one of the group of friends of mine is one of the naysayers to Dale Stevens. And we watched him particularly on the TV in the pub on Saturday. Mm. And the percentage of balls forward was amazing. Yeah. He was absolutely driving that midfield.
Do you subscribe to the theory that Dale Stevens only ever played it backwards and sideways?
No, I don't. Because but there's this one friend of ours who always says it. So we point out, no, he didn't. No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Adam? Dale?
I think he's like Marmite for a lot of the fans. I think people like... I think it's just the... I think because he doesn't spray balls like Paul Scott, you know, he doesn't have that kind of aura about him.
He can do. I mean,
look
at that ball we played to knockout last year.
But he's encouraged to now, isn't he?
No, I know that. But it's like a lot of the times it felt like the first ball had to be a safe ball. And I think now he's trying to think, right, I've been given confidence now. If I do play it forward and I give it away, it's not the end of the world. Mm. You know, that this is what the manager wants me to do. And I think him and Proper are becoming a very, very good partnership. But it's ironic, isn't it? Like, you think last season, Brighton won their 1-0. They probably didn't play as well and got a result. And this time they played better, more encouragement, and they didn't get a win.
Okay, you also got the point is that I feel that it's counterintuitive to Dale's natural game to play it sideways and backwards. All right, his first thing with any possession-based football is you keep the ball, you play the simple pass. You know, if there's a champagne pass on you that goes flying out to the winger, fine, great. But he is a decent passer of the ball. There's games where he's had a stinker and it's not working. If the whole thing isn't clicking, he'll, I won't say he'll lose his head quickly, but you know, he wears his heart and he says, when he took that shot against Newcastle and the ball went flying over the bar, the camera zoomed straight in on him and we saw some real Anglo-Saxon. I'm not going to repeat it, we'll get the radio station closed down, but you can see it's a bloke who really wants to do well. As we've known on this show, Dale Stevens for the last 3 or 4 years has been one of my favourite players and seriously, seriously underrated.
I think he has like that Ashley Barnes effect, doesn't he? That people feel that he doesn't really contribute enough, but if you take him out of this side,
absolutely.
I agree. I mean, this year, I think particularly with Dale, though, I think this kind of, this formation and this style of football for him at the moment, it actually suits him better, and he's actually become more visible because, I mean, what he was doing...
Him and Proper, or just him?
Well, both of them, to be fair. But, I mean, Dale in particular, because Proper was visible anyway because he does flash things.
Yes.
Dale is one of those players, like a water carrier, if you like that. He often went unnoticed in games, but what he was doing, he was that vital cog that kept it going. Yeah.
What does Dale Stevens do? But actually, far more than you never notice.
That possession figure on Saturday was extraordinary.
Yeah.
But the bit that we were watching, when we were watching the game, particularly the first half, wasn't just how much we had the ball, but we had it in their half.
Yeah.
And I heard Steve Bruce moaning on about, you know, oh, they had a lot of ball, but it was in their own half. It actually wasn't. It was mostly in their half. And that's what I liked about Stevens and Proper this season. They're playing the ball, but they're in the opposition half more than they seemed to be last year.
They're kind of about 10 yards further forward. Yeah, it makes all the difference.
Absolutely. So before we move on then, we have to talk about the Colony chance, which was...
brilliant, but unlucky. I think Adam got it right. It's unlucky.
But from a defensive point of view, Adam, you that's a sort of tap. You want to be on the end of that, clearing that off the line, don't you?
It's like scoring a goal as a defender. I mean, if the goal line technology wasn't there, you'd probably say you feel that would have gone in because it looked more in than not. But he's a decent finisher. You know, had that chance against Villa, didn't he, where he hit the crossbar. Yeah. He's quick in the 18-yard box. And it's just unlucky. On another day, that goes in.
He needs one to go in.
But the point is, this is a fellow who it was only his second game, and I think it was his first start, wasn't it? Did he come on as a sub? Okay, but
his third sub appearance.
This is a kiddie who doesn't look out of place in the Premier League. Now, how good is that? Mm-hmm. You know, I know you've been raving about him for a long time, and he's clearly been ready to make that step up. And he got injured about this time last year, but he really doesn't look out of place. And when you saw him playing against Villa, he was clearly head above. And we'll talk about that in a bit. Yeah. He was clearly head and shoulders above the rest of the team.
One thing I'd just like to say about that before you move on, AD, is the instantaneousness of the decision that it wasn't a goal. You know, we all thought, is it, isn't it? And we knew it wasn't straight away because that goal line technology is
instant, yeah.
Is not
yeah,
far.
For that one, I was kind of hoping it wasn't goal line technology.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and I have a shirt of the week for you, which again, Al, I absolutely love this one. Is it
a minger then?
No, it's not. It's beautiful, I think, actually. I'm going to give it to Adam to describe this shirt of the week for
actually,
you.
It's not that bad, actually.
Kind of.
You might actually know what this
the
is.
The lower half of it is like a Lazio blue.
Uh-huh.
It's got a blue collar.
The clue was you might know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, it's got white shoulders with a kind of blue and white horizontal strip in between.
And it's got a boat in the middle of it.
Right. So I can't help feeling we're not back to Grimsby again, are we?
No, we're not back to Grimsby, no.
No, because there's no fish involved this time. Has he photoshopped out the badge here,
yes,
Adam?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Nigel's going to have a look at this. Who's it sponsored by?
American Diner.
Yeah, the A55 American Diner. Now, the A55, where does that go?
That goes, isn't that through the West Midlands somewhere? So that's...
there's a lot of boats.
Hang on, I'm looking.
There's a lot of boats that go through the West Midlands.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't recognise the badge, so I'm going to guess it's non-league. Boats...
Southport?
Southport? No.
I really wanted it to be Barrow, just to get their four games on the show tonight.
Will Barrow for you.
Well, doesn't it look a National League song? So I don't recognise the badge.
No, is it someone in
North Wales?
It is.
Oh, I was
8:55, so I'm going to say Bangor.
No, it's not. But I have now got to learn Welsh, which is nice.
Oh, God. Phil, I hate you.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah, okay.
Here is your shirt of the week. And it's a new one in my collection, says Phil. It's the 2019 to 2020 home shirt of Welsh non-league side Holyhead Town.
Oh, okay.
They are known as the...
How didn't we get that?
Yeah, I was supposed to know that.
Well, when it comes to football shirts, Phil's quite an anorak.
Yeah. Oh, I get that.
I suppose Holyhead...
They're known as the Harbourmen, and they are the current.
Come on, God. Do you want me to read it?
No, Carteffi Crelendel Chened League champions. They play at the Millbank Sports Club. Thank God for that. And that's got the capacity of 500. Or basically how many turn up. The shirt is a homage to design that Lazio, good guess there, Anna. have used in the 1980s and more recently in 2014 and 18. You can see them all at oldfootballshirts.com, of course. And there is a nod to the seafaring heritage of Holyhead. The greatest ever player to wear a Holyhead shirt is Tommy Welsh, who passed away earlier this year, aged 90. He's so revered in Anglesey that he's been honoured on the left sleeve of the shirt, and his name is printed above the flag of his home county... above the flag of the home country of Northern Ireland. He made his debut in...
Hang on, someone called Welsh is from Northern Ireland?
Yeah. He made his debut in 1953 and retired in 1965, and he's a record goal scorer in Welsh football, 630 during his career.
What made you think that Adam was going to know this?
Any of us.
You said Adam might know this. Well, you know, hang on, I mean, I know Adam does non-league, but there's non-league and then there's, you know, then there's kickabout
Welsh
stuff.
Non-league.
Yeah. Yeah, Welsh non-league.
He would have been a Wrexham.
Okay. So what division? That must be tier 12 or something.
Probably Welsh league, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. It is actually quite a nice shirt, actually. Mm. But I mean, I think Phil is just doing sort of football shirt wheelies now, isn't he? I mean, how on earth are we supposed to get?
They are currently in the Lockstock Welsh Alliance Division 2.
No, you made that up, didn't you? No,
and their captain, Ata Thomas, has played every game this season so far and scored in all 8 games, including a hat-trick against Pwelli. There we go.
Pwelli.
Pwelli, all right. There you go. My Welsh is as good as my English, to be honest.
No, it really isn't.
And my English is
good. You say county instead of country.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Phil. So, yes, you can go and visit, you go and see Phil's shirt site. It's oldfootballshirts.com. There's over 100,000 shirts have been put up there, each one unique. Go and, if you feel like spending a rainy Sunday going through a virtual online gallery, knock yourself silly. So, thanks for that, Phil. Next time, I would say one in plain English, but AD's going to trip over that as well.
Probably.
So, yeah.
Any of your shirts up there yet? Have you sent any in yet? Any of your old ones?
He hasn't asked me.
Well, it's not an invitation. You don't have to wait for an invitation.
I used to see him at Clapham every now and then, Clapham Junction.
Oh, yeah.
But he never asked me there.
Yeah. All right, okay. Phil, could you please ask Adam Virgo to put his shirts up? The fact that it's actually an open invitation to do so, I think, is lost on Virgs. Could you please make a point of asking him nicely, and then he'll do so. That said, I suspect that probably every shirt that Virgs has ever worn has already gone up on the site anyway. So.
Ah, but not matchable ones, and probably not ones from Yeovil or something.
So. Oh, yes. That's another mention of Yeovil. Who's going to get more mentions, Yeovil or Barrow?
Bristol Rovers.
Okay, all right. What's
okay,
next?
Well, let's go to the Villa game this week then. So where do we start with this one? Adam, I'm going to have to ask you the question, because is it, rightly or wrongly, whatever the team was it disrespecting the competition, or was it giving valuable experience to young players?
Good question. I think people can look at it and show how far the football club's come, that we're in a situation now where what Arsenal have done over the years and Manchester United and played youngsters in the early rounds. It's a difficult one. I would rather see youngsters playing with the fringe first team players that need some game time. That, for me, would have been a better balance. But I was at the training ground on the Tuesday, and I kind of knew what he was going to do, and I was quite surprised. And it's not... and you've got Duffy and Bong and Button playing. There's three experienced players here. You probably need 3 or 4 more to go with these players that you feel that could make the step up into the first team.
We have 3 or 4 ready that weren't going to be risked for Chelsea?
Yeah, I did. That was, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's...
I mean, the argument that comes back is we've got so many players out on loan. But, and again, this is something that you've experienced, Adam, is that you go out on loan to get that first team experience, because otherwise you're going to be kicking your heels. Now, it's easy in hindsight that, you wait 6 weeks... just in case there's a whole load of injuries to some fringe first team players to sort of bring in the so you don't have to bring in the youngsters too much. But
I think there's an element as well that Graham was probably looking at players that he may think's ready,
mm-hmm.
and then he probably looks them after the 90 minutes and thinks actually they're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
But listen, if Brian would have won that game, you'd be calling him a genius.
Absolutely. And you'd have actually been hailing the academy.
Exactly. So it's plausible that he's prepared to give kids a chance in a major competition. I know the League Cup's not seen that by many clubs, but it's still a way into Europe for a lot of teams, and the teams that tend to win it are the teams that are near the top of the Premier League. So
I'm actually looking at it more that it actually disrespects Aston Villa than the competition more than that.
Yeah.
Should we make here?
Sorry?
Do you think they care? They put out a good team and went out to win it. So
absolutely.
I don't suppose they...
Well, I mean, when you look at the, what, especially when, I mean, this is hindsight, of course, but when you see the draw and then how the competition's going to open out in the next round as well.
Who have Villa got in the next round?
They're at home to Wolves.
Right.
But you've got Man United and Arsenal playing each other. Or,
yeah, that's right.
And you've got Chelsea and Liverpool playing each other.
We'll get back to this in a second. Yes, Manchester United against Rochdale. Now, that is something else, isn't it? You, how many people, even, you know, like I say, I turned 50 on Sunday, how many people still have that harboured dream, even though it's now a lost dream, of being a 16-year-old and going onto the pitch at Old Trafford and scoring against Manchester United?
After asking for the day off school.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, all right, you made your debut at 18, Virgs, but, you know, it's that must be something else.
Yeah, it's you want to play at the best grounds, and, you know, the team that Solskjaer put out was probably the team you're looking at. Well, Brighton, maybe experienced players with young players as well.
Even West Ham, though, they put out a strong side. But in this game...
Yeah, but I'm talking about Rochdale particularly here. What I'm talking about is... And there's a lot of Brighton alumni there. They had the Brighton goalkeeper playing for Rochdale. Yes. There was McNulty was there. Calvin Andrew was there, yeah. You know, so... you know, he's and this kiddie who looked like he was a reject from the Girl Guides. It was... but, no... I take Virg's point, and I also take the point that people are upset about because they pay 15 quid. Oh, if they'd have known this, you know, they wouldn't charge us. Well, at what point? When the draw was made, how many people knew, including Graham Potter, what side Graham Potter was going to put out? If they'd have known that what side we were going to put out, I wouldn't have paid that money. Well, I mean, all right, you're saying he knew the day before, but maybe Potter
disrespecting his supporters though.
No, because the fans moan when there's not enough kids coming through.
Yes.
And then when the kids do come through, then it's too many. So you can't... Listen, the manager will never win. The priority is to stay in the Premier League. Yes. That's the main thing, the be-all or end-all.
Yeah.
And if you can find one or two of these youngsters that can come through to the first team through that opportunity, the Aston Villa game, then you have to take it.
And under Chris, that pathway probably
wasn't there. It never would have happened.
And I don't think anyone's stock fell as a result of that game. I mean, maybe one or two made, you know, not too much of a progression.
Yeah.
But you got Hayden Roberts, who's probably the youngest player on the pitch, and scored the goal.
Yeah.
I mean, what a buzz for him next
people
day.
People love, like, March playing. People love Dunkey playing. People, when I was there, you know, loved seeing Dean Hammond, myself, Adam Hinchelwood, Adam Alab. You know, all these youngsters coming through. The fans loved that.
So it's big as they can identify.
You know, you look at Chelsea, Mount, Abraham, you know, players like that, Tomori. The fans love it. They absolutely love it.
I'm just really so pleased that Graham Potter has the faith in those players. That, yeah, they're under 18s, they're under 23s. Well, actually, for 1 week, Matthew, they are first-team players. And we should support
Hayden
them.
Hayden Roberts was doing his GCSEs at Hove Park School last year. I mean, that's...
It's great for
the
community.
So was Glenn Murray.
Yeah, great for the community. And also what it does as well is that we can maybe now go into Europe and pick out a young Barcelona talent that we can bring over and use them. You know, look at Cabellos at Arsenal, who's on loan from Real Madrid. We may get that youngster that's the up-and-coming player that we may have him for a season. You never know, because the youngsters are getting chances.
But to those supporters who withdrew their support that night and said, I'm not supporting this team, I'd have wanted my money back. If I'd have known this was going to happen, I wouldn't have come along. I'm thinking, hang on, you're supporting a Brighton Hove Albion side here. It's the first team side, and you're arbitrarily withdrawing your support because you haven't got the players in that you want. Sorry, Graham Potter's the manager. He's the one that picks the team.
If he starts three of those on Saturday, are you going to pull your money out? It's just like, you can't...
I mean, you point made the perfect point, though, Al. I mean,
I usually do.
He's going to make a note of that.
Yeah. I mean, out of the 100 tweets that you made. And 99 that are wrong, this one's the one that was right.
Which was?
The fact that you're all for giving the players a halfway an opportunity, but just maybe not all at the same time.
Well, this is the point, isn't it? 18, I mean, Virg's point is absolutely right. I think that for every youngster that starts, they've got to at least have one mentor on the pitch.
I just thought there was too many youngsters.
In one hit.
In one hit.
Yeah.
Did anyone stand out for you at all?
I thought.
You remember the team?
Yeah, no. I thought that Teddy Jenks playing alongside Shane Duffy equipped himself quite well. I was
apart from Hayden Roberts playing alongside Shane Duffy, but that's all right. Teddy Jenks was playing in midfield. So.
I thought it was 72, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was playing very deep in that case. I think he was actually playing pretty well. I actually saw Richards. I was actually a bit disappointed with. He had a couple of decent runs, but apart from that, he didn't.
Really
the game
him.
Passed him by. The game passed him by. The midfield is where we lost it. We defended well, we attacked well, but the midfield was where we lost the game.
Out of all of them, it was actually Taylor Richards was the one that I was probably more
Connolly, of
most
course,
excited
had a brilliant
about. Because I mean, I thought when he had the ball, he actually drove forward and tried to do something.
And he also went down for a dive as well. So, Rich, you know, it's...
Yeah, but he came here from Man City. What do you expect?
I would like to mention there is one person sitting here who bet on Hayden Roberts to score at any time in the game.
Did you?
At 12-1, yeah.
So, all right, well, beers are on nice.
You haven't seen the sort of bets, the sort of stakes I do.
All right. No one really sort of stood out as being absolutely brilliant. I mean, apart from Connolly, but then he is basically a first team player anyway. But I don't think anyone really sort of.
Ironically, I think one of them. I didn't see the whole game, but Shane Duffy got turned for one of the goals.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I mean, he was actually trying to bring the fella down and failed, and then tried to claim a free kick himself.
He was actually.
We've all done it. we all trying to do it.
Yeah, but you know, the point is it was a first team goal. The fact that it was scored by one of the kids, from one of the kids who took the corner. You know, I take Virg's point, but there's also the point that these kids have played together. So they're kind of all supporting each other, aren't they? I mean, they're players who know each other's game almost. It is different from the potter ball that we've seen from the other players.
You would have wanted more senior experience.
But then
you
just think, who's available? But I also don't buy into the whole notion of, you know, we had Gyökeres, we got Ben White on loan, we got this power on the last. Well, they're out there because they're nearly ready to come through. Someone said if they're good enough, they should be playing for us. No, they're good. And this is where you went on loan to Exeter, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you need to...
Leeds, he's doing absolutely brilliantly. The people I speak to about him are just raving about him. He's doing really, really well.
Yeah.
And you need to go out there. There's no point being at Brighton if you're almost ready for that first team where you're just going to sit on the bench for the majority of the season. You may as well give that to someone else that may get the odd Premier League game if an injury does apply, but then you're going to get 46 Championship games under your belt. You're going to get 3 or 4 FA Cup games under your belt. You're going to be used to playing in front of crowds on a Saturday for 3 points. There's a different mentality with that, and there'll be players coming back next season from their loans a better player for doing that.
Yeah, but Virgs, if you were here now, if you had your time again, you could have gone on loan to Boca Juniors.
True.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, this is Ben
looks
White.
Looks like he plays for Boca Juniors.
Well, Ben White's a fellow who played in a game that knocked a Premier League side out anyway last season, didn't he? It was at Newport, knocked out Leicester in the Cup. So he's got the pedigree. And this one season, I think Leeds fans are actually saying, well, if we go up, we want him. And I'm thinking, well, if Leeds are going to spend silly money, then this, you know, who knows? But, Ben White's doing brilliantly.
Yeah. But I mean, and also in this game, there was the commentator's dream in this game, where Bong played long to Spong.
Played to long man.
Spong played to long man, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it all went wrong for a song. The Villa fans were wetting themselves with that name. Well, to be fair, we were too.
I swear he's in Molly's year at school. She's 7.
Yeah. No, I had seen that name crop up when I'd seen the under 23s play, and you're sort of like you sort of giggle under your hand a little bit, but you know that's just because basically we're pathetic people, really.
Okay. Well, it's happened, and we know there's some people that are upset.
Sorry,
about
hang on.
It.
I mean, sorry. Just one thing. One name better than that. Yappy. Who comes onto the pitch
was
called
brilliant.
Yappy? He was very good. The way he went down like he'd been shot and then sprung back up like Lazarus.
He was excited. Your 18-year-old, signed from Paris, signing players from PSG. I mean, that's how far
we come. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to that. Now, Nigel, you've got a new gig.
Yes, indeed.
Do tell.
Well, as part of celebrating my 50th anniversary of supporting the Albion last Friday, when Tim Carter put in the Supporters Club newsletter that they were, you know, would anybody put their hand up and be chairman? I obviously volunteered. Now, I just so happen to have brought your membership forms
vision,
along
yeah.
here. I brought you one each.
Well, thank you.
I brought you a pen, so no excuses.
So, first and foremost, give us a brief potted history of the Supporters Club. It's not the official Supporters Club, is it?
No, it's not. And there is no such thing as the official Supporters Club. Apparently, the Albion are putting together some scheme where the Supporters Club subscribe to be recognised as a Supporters Club. And that is going to include Seagulls Down Under, Seagulls Over Toronto, Seagulls Over London, and the Brighton of Albion Supporters Club will be one of them. Now, the Albion Supporters Club that I'm now chairman of was formed in the 20s. And back in those days, there were thousands of members. There's hundreds now only. it's increasing by the time, as we can see here. there was thousands, and they would like rent out the Hippodrome in Brighton and have a big dance and all sorts of things. And if you wanted to join the supporters club, you would go to one of the number of boxes around the Goldstone and sign up there for 7 and 6.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so different. So the supporters club numbers have declined, and I want to do something about that and increase it. So we're all about increasing the membership benefits. Only costs £5 to join. Membership forms like the one you got there are available at www.basc.com. That's the advert done. So we're about increasing the membership benefits, mm-hmm. which at the moment you get a newsletter and you get some other benefits of coming along to meetings and what have you. There's going to be more in the weeks to come. We've got a questionnaire we're putting out to existing members. But yeah, I just want to liven it up, freshen it all up, and get some new younger people on board. And my grandson, born a fortnight ago, is the youngest ever member when he joined age 12 days.
I mean, obviously times have changed, but I mean, it must be remembered that the importance that the supporters had in the darker days when we tried to save the club.
Mm. Well, back in those days, the supporters club, led by Liz Costa and Tim Carter, the names that we're all familiar with, were very much involved, but at the same time they sort of formed an alliance with the likes of BISA and the other independent groups and the independent people. But you know, they got together and decided which were of the protest ideas were the best ones, and you know, threw their support behind each other. So yeah, very important times there. We don't have the same sort of campaigning now, but there are still things supporters are less than happy with. You know, whether it's cashless, stadium going cashless, not everybody's happy about that. But then not happy, everybody's happy with, you know, the world going cashless. Whether it's something we can challenge, I don't know, but there's other things that people mention.
So I mean, when you're talking about that, do you see yourself as a campaigning group? Do you see yourself as purely a kind of a talking shop, or as almost like a go-to place where you'll have your own surgery and say, you know, come to us and we'll are you there to represent the members of the club when it comes to talking to the club themselves? Sorry, to represent the members of the supporters club when it comes to talking to the football club.
There are channels open between the supporters club and the club to, you know, go if there are issues which are raised by the supporters club members. But I think primarily it should be just a membership group for people, particularly the people overseas, live outside of the area, you know, feeling more part of the of supporters than they're able to from wherever they are. Now, of course, these days people can listen to this show, Seagulls Down Under.
Our one supporter does.
Indeed, he does.
Yeah.
He or she. And you know, there's so many more. The internet or the message boards that we know about. So it's kind of maybe needs to be different. I don't think a campaigning group is a very attractive thing to call it. Let's call it a membership group, and like-minded people get together, and we've got something in common, which is a problem, then we've got a route to go and maybe raise it.
So tell us about the structure and the hierarchy of it. I mean, it's members. I mean, obviously you're the chair. We've still got Liz Costa as the vice chair. And tell us about the rest of the board and the delegates of the club.
So there's a committee of seven people. And they're different people have all been involved with the Albion for a period of years. And that's one of the strengths of it. It's also possibly one of the weaknesses of it, that we'd want to welcome some new people on board.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you join again, Nigel?
So you go to BASC.com and you click on the membership tab on the website and download a form. Now, at the moment, I've had one person particularly, who I believe is a stockbroker, who was complaining to me quite vociferously that it's the age of the arc, downloading a form, filling it in, writing a cheque or putting a pound note and sending it off. And
he's right.
You know what he's talking about. and he's quite right. But at the moment, that's where we are. So we're looking to have an online sign up and all that modern stuff. We're looking to have, you know, Twitter and Instagram and all that modern, communication, because it's a little bit old-fashioned at the moment, but it'll change.
Absolutely. I mean, when I think of the sports club, I'm thinking of the Goldstone. When you think of the Goldstone, you're thinking of something really almost nowadays, because it's what, 22 years since we left it, something almost archaic and back from the arc. I mean, even looking at the your masthead here, the Brighton Hove Albion Sports Club, excuse me, founded 1912, lost again, round found again, reformed 1922, 1948 and 1982. Now, is this a kind of a reformation, or was the club still going?
No, it's been going ever since 1982. You're right. It's not been continuous since 1912, no. But it's been continuous since 1982.
Right.
So
what's the level of, are you looking to double the membership, or do you have a lust for glory that actually says that every time you go to the stadium you think my people?
Is it the Popular People's Front or the People's Popular Front?
A club of this size ought to have a big supporters club, and it ought to have many more than the hundreds it's got at the moment.
When we do stuff on the Football Football Sports Association, Football Supporters Federation, one of the things that they have is that when they invite, when they have their biannual meetings a year with the Premier League, is that the first group of people that I invite from a given club is someone from the Supporters Trust. Mm. Now, the Albion doesn't have a Supporters Trust, so it's someone from the Supporters Club, and it's always been Liz Costa in the past. So you might actually get an invite from here on in to go to their meetings, and I know they've got one in October. And then after that, if they can't find someone else, they find someone from the media. So hence coming back to me, which was good and a really good experience. But the point is that you've now kind of got this notion of being able to have to represent the Albion, or rather the Albion fans, through the supporters club.
Yeah, so that would be a good reason for people to join, so that they can have input to when we go to those meetings, that, you know, the things that concerns them
and get some of the important stuff done.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, Adam, I've got to ask you, I've got a little section here called The World According to Vergs. It's beautiful. We have to ask you a couple of key questions. Uh-oh. Most importantly, are you a fan of VAR, in or out?
And this is a bloke who works for television.
So I agree with the goal line technology, because that can't be put into
it's black and white.
Exactly. The problem you have is you are asking someone else's opinion on an incident that they may or may not think. You know, you look at the Tillemann challenge on Callum Wilson. I could have told you within 5 seconds that's a red card challenge where it takes it, you know. So the fact you're still going to another person to make another decision, for me, is not going to work. And do you know what?
Sometimes diminished responsibility.
Sometimes football, the VAR may not suit football, because football's quite a fast-paced game, and people like to be. Think cricket's very slow because of the over rate and stuff. And then you look at rugby; it's like 4.5 minutes for a conversion when they take it. It's like so. It's a slow-moving game, where football, I don't think, is like that. And I just think that decisions have to be made quicker. You know, the diving thing. If you're not touched, then that will serve a purpose. But when that penalty in Napoli. That Liverpool got, that wasn't a clear and obvious error by the referee, even though it wasn't a penalty. It's just, there's still so much for it to sort of go forward, and especially the offsides as well. The offside for me is the one.
Ludicrous.
I mean, I do MLS, so MLS don't use the lines. So, you know, when they kind of line up the lines.
The offside lines, you mean?
They don't use it. So MLS, they don't use that. I think, moving on, the rule...
What do they use then? How do they determine it?
No, they just look at it. So they will just look at it, and if he looks onside, they'll give him on, and if he looks offside,
really should be by the eye, or even if it's a freeze frame.
I think now the rule should change. That just say, for instance, your back foot is in line with the defender, but half of your body's offside. For me, you should be onside. That your foot is onside. If your whole body is over the offside line, then you're offside. I think the rule will end up changing because of VAR.
So it's the laws that need updating rather than the VAR.
I think so. Yeah.
Because I think what it was that we wanted as fans is, okay, if you've got a player, we're Adam's point, you've got the foot is kind of in an unnatural position and therefore is keeping an attacker onside or not offside. We wanted an absolute version of what determines offside. And when it comes to, you know, sort of someone's fingernails, then you realise actually this isn't working, and yet this is almost perversely something that we looked at. We wanted to quantify exactly what offside was. You know, the position of the body where the defender's leaning away from goal and the attacker's leaning towards goal. Mm. And yet, if you look at their feet, I mean, it's difficult to explain on the radio, but, you know, some part of their body's onside, some of it's offside. And you think, well, which part is actually the bit that you deal with? So we wanted to quantify it. Now we've got the technology to do so, we're screaming. So, you know, it's always a case of careful what you wish for.
But sometimes they get camera angles that, BT or Sky have camera angles that Stockley Park don't get. That's the thing I don't understand as well. It's like you get an angle behind the goal, the fourth referee in the booth won't see that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's camera angles.
They should have access to all the things.
Exactly, but they don't. They still have access only to certain camera angles, which is wrong. But it's going to take a lot of teething, a lot of problems to get through. But for me at the moment, it hasn't worked. And also as well, the referees are not overturning referee decisions.
What do you mean?
Well, basically, if the referee gives a decision, there's four that they've mentioned already a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it, that should have been red cards or should have been a penalty, and they're not doing that, and that for me is a major issue.
They're saying they're using a higher bar, but whatever that means. But
so effectively, it's sort of like kind of going with the on-pitch decision unless you see it. Well, it's supposed to be the clear and obvious ever, but even what defines clear and obvious? And we get into the nth degree of...
Yeah.
You know, once upon a time, it was a human game and not one that was done on a spreadsheet.
There's too many things, you know, it should be... little footsteps to start with that VAR should be involved with. Is a player contacted for a foul? No, so it's no penalty. That's clear and obvious. And then you then progress it on. I think they're just doing too much too quickly.
It seems to be all about reasons to stop goals, though. I mean, the Ashley Barnes against Norwich, he's fouled, but that didn't go to VAR. And if it had done, they'd have given it a penalty.
Exactly. I mean, you're right. I mean, they're looking for a reason not to give it to them rather than for a reason
to.
Are
they doing that? This is a cynic within me. Are they only doing that for the other 14 and the other ones a reason to give it?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Next one. We've got quite a few players out on loan at the moment, Vergs. Two of which are two of our main line strikers. What did you think of Florian Andoni and Jurgen Locadia being allowed to go out on loan?
Locadia, I understood. I thought Andoni could have still played a purpose this season. I think it shows that Graham's in charge, that you know they're big signings. Andoni wasn't a big signing, but they spent a long time trying to get him. And Locadia, record transfer, it just hadn't worked out for him. So credit to the hierarchy of giving Graham that ability to let the players go. Because, listen, it's the way... A lot of signings at Brighton made have been good, but you have to say a lot of signings recently have not been good. And when you go into leagues that are a bit up and down, that you're never too sure what you're going to get, you get your Locadias, you get your Hambashes and players like that that just doesn't work out. So I thought Andonel slightly surprised, but if Connolly's going to get a chance instead, then you compliment that. But Locadia, I totally understood why.
So someone else is coming in January, presumably, you reckon?
Yeah. Let me put that question back to you then in that case, Adi. Who would you rather see playing, Locadia or Connolly?
It's an interesting question because I think that Locadia was actually having... He was looking like he was going to have an impact under this manager. So
Saw his sub appearance against Southampton and he was dreadful.
Yeah, but...
Leon Best bad.
He wasn't that bad. I mean, he hit the post for start.
Where he frankly should have scored.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Leon Best would have like hit the other goal.
No, he'd have run away to the referee, screaming and moaning before the.
But yeah, I think there's definitely more to come from Jurgen. Would I like to see Connolly given the chance? Absolutely,
Nigel? I mean, Locadia is back to your Marmite character, isn't he?
I've never seen Locadia play a good game.
Okay, that's the end of that one.
Okay.
Case that Andoni sort of threw his toys out of his prime a little bit anyway? He wasn't promised first team football. Connolly's going to be sort of, being promoted and being given a chance. And I don't know if this is the case, but, you know, Andoni, and apparently he has previous for this, when he was in Spain. If I can't play, I want to go somewhere else. So.
And finally, just quickly in the last minute, Defenders Union, were you surprised to see that it's Shane Duffy that's been moved aside?
Yeah. I think they want to put their hat on Dan Byrne being the player to move. But every time I saw Dan play in the FA Cup games last season, I thought he was outstanding. And going to the three at the back, I think, complements the style of centre-half that we've got. Shane's been fantastic over the last few seasons. So I am surprised.
Player of the season last
year. Yeah, I am surprised. But you can't argue who's come in with Webster and Byrne. But yeah, that did surprise me, I must admit.
Okay. Well, that is actually it. That's all we've actually got time for.
Just quickly then, Nigel, remind our listener where we can get to sign up for the Supporters Club.
Bless you. www.bhasc.com. Look forward to it.
Okay, so what next for you, Vergs?
Dover. And then I've got Marseille Rennes on Sunday.
Well, that sounds a bit tastier, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Dover Athletic. I just love the way you go.
It's not
Dover.
It's Crabble. And it's a hill to get. Have you been down there?
No.
Have you not?
No.
Oh.
Well, I've been to Dover, obviously.
Yeah. So I'm down there. So they
can't even spell.
So they're playing. They're playing Halifax, who are second in the league, and then Marseille, Rennes on Sunday.
Excellent.
What a contrast! What a contrast! Yeah. Something we'll see anyway.
But Adam Virgo, thank you very much. Thanks, Nigel Summers.
Thank you.
Good luck with the chairmanship and everything.
Yep.
Yeah, and Al, even your form.
Do you want to just loft your bat?
Yes.
Toast well. So that has been it. Happy birthday to Al for this Sunday, of course. It's a big one. 50. He's made it. That's amazing. So I've been Ailey Packer. This has been the Albion Rule. We'll see you all again next week. Thanks for listening. See you then. Bye. Let it all hang out, but you won't fool the children.